Welcome to another exciting episode of Our Blue Bahamas, where we talk about the conservation of our Bahamian marine environment that sustains our way of life. I am your host, Crystal. Thank you for tuning in. Today, we are talking about climate change impacts on the Bahamas, the big environmental boogeyman, for lack of a better term. And I'm here with Heather, our outreach officer at Brief, Jasmine, our outreach and education officer at Brief, and Farah, our Bahamas environmental steward scholar. And good morning, everyone. Well, good afternoon, 2 p.m. We're going to talk about how climate change is threatening the Bahamas, particularly its marine ecosystems, with firsthand insight from a youth perspective. So I want to start off with Jasmine. Could you explain what climate change is all about?
Okay, Crystal. So when we think about climate change is a global phenomenon. It's happening in the Bahamas now, but I just want you to know that it's a global problem. And what's happening is we're having a lot of greenhouse gas emission, and that's just certain gases that trap heat into the atmosphere, and that's coming from the way we, by burning fossil fuels for like cars, automobiles, and electricity. And what that's doing is increasing the temperature of Earth itself. And so what's happening is these greenhouse gas emission is causing the Earth to heat up. And it's getting hotter and hotter because we're increasing more and more. And this is happening, this phenomenon started happening during the industrial ages, in like the 1990s, when we started a lot of coal burning, the factory ages, and when we started driving automobiles. And so what's happening is that's causing global warming. Yes. And global
in the
warming
1900s
So it's happening now because we're still burning a lot of fossil fuels, and it's so the Earth has a capacity of taking the carbon dioxide out, you know, through photosynthesis, like trees use carbon dioxide. But right now, because we're burning so much that it has exceeded the amount of that trees can take in a sustainable rate. So what's happening is, like I said, we're having global warming, and the whole climate, which is the average weather of the whole world, is changing. And it's getting hotter and hotter and hotter. And just to even put that in perspective, last summer was the hottest summer ever, the hottest day ever recorded since we started recording climate and weather. And the previous year, that was the record. So when we're thinking about that, the whole climate of the whole entire Earth is changing.
And so you mentioned natural carbon emissions. You mentioned, you said that, you know, now we're producing so much CO2 emissions, right, carbon, that, you know, it's too much for the trees to handle, the trees, the seagrass beds, the other, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, so what are the natural ways that we always used to emit carbon?
The carbon cycle is a natural process that's happening on Earth. Like a lot of things, when they respire, like when we respire, we let off carbon dioxide. And then, you know, we live in a symbiotic relationship with a lot of plants and things that photosynthesize, and they would take the carbon dioxide and give us oxygen. So that's just one greenhouse gas. It has a few, but mostly it's carbon and dioxide and oxides of carbon that's contributing. But when we think about this, these are natural processes. But what is happening now is we're putting too much more in the global landscape. Bear in mind, this carbon existed on Earth, right? But they were stored and not in a gas form. And so when we were dredging and going into these deep
and
depths,
coal mining
and getting
and burning,
coal
yeah.
and fossil fuels
and gas,
these were carbon that were not in the atmosphere, and now we're taking them from a place that it's inert, where it doesn't impact the carbon cycle in a way
in the atmosphere,
in the atmosphere, in the air. And then now it's being in the atmosphere, so it's too much. So our capacity to handle take it out is is just causing a lot of heat being trapped into the atmosphere.
Okay. And Heather, do you want to build on the climate change explanation just for additional context?
Yeah, so I also wanted to say that we experienced some of these effects firsthand in the Bahamas, especially with our oceans. We rely heavily on our oceans, and our oceans actually absorb a great amount of the heat that we see from climate change and global warming. And so what you're not seeing is the ocean temperature also gradually rising. Mm-hmm. And that can pose a threat for a lot of organisms that are temperature sensitive, especially when they're at a depth where the temperature is pretty constant and they're comfortable. And then you come with a heat wave above the water. And then you have also an underwater heat wave that follows with that, since our oceans are absorbing that excess heat. And right now, if we didn't have our oceans absorbing heat, we would have heat above 100 degrees Fahrenheit. And so our oceans definitely play a big role in absorbing this excess heat that we don't see as a result of climate change.
And that would explain, and correct me if I'm wrong, that would explain the melting ice caps.
Yes, definitely. Like I said, this is affecting everything. So if the ice caps are melting in the northern hemisphere. So, and then what I really want to stress is that it's not so much also about the climate changing, is how fast it's changing. It's changing at an alarming rate. So, I mean, essentially how organisms, how we live over time, we adapt to certain changes, but they tend to be gradual. And a problem that we're seeing in a lot of our marine ecosystem and globally, this isn't just marine, but globally, is having that capacity to adapt as quickly as the climate is changing.
Yeah, very true. And you know what I think about too? In the, when you talked about the oceans and a reflection of the temperature on the earth and the ocean absorbing a lot of that. In the summer, if it's a very hot day and you go to the beach, sometimes the water is very hot too. It's almost boiling. It almost feels like a bathtub, right? And that's a part of what's happening in the summer when we have hotter summers. And then in the spring, like how we have the spring now, the water's been very, very cool. So, you know, you go in on a day when the sun is shining, you walk in, the water's a little chilly, right? And that's more of like a normal thing. But in the summer, it gets really, really almost uncomfortably warm, right?
And then also, when we think about climate change, it has a lot of marine organisms and things that live and thrive under the water that can't say, okay, well, I'll just go somewhere else. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So a lot of animals are forced to be in that atmosphere. I mean, we take it for granted that, oh, if we're hot, we can turn on the fan, we can turn on the AC, we can get a cold cup of water, all of these things. But these options aren't available to these marine creatures. So
yes, especially like coral, right?
Yes.
Or mangroves. Are the mangroves impacted in any way by climate change? We hear about the coral reefs all the time with coral bleaching and ocean acidification. But what about the mangroves? Are they impacted that much by climate change, and how?
Yeah, so we still have organisms that can't escape the rising heat within those mangroves. Like Jasmine was talking about, those sessile animals that can't move from place to place. They're just simply one place they live. But an interesting fact about mangroves is that it's almost a carbon offset in a sense. And so this ecosystem is really a great source of natural capital, because mangroves are naturally carbon sinks. So they absorb excess carbon out of the atmosphere. And so that's why when we talk about mangroves, we always like ensure we protect and preserve mangroves.
Because
that's one service we don't see. And mangroves provide a lot of key ecosystem services, but the biggest one is that carbon offset and really absorbing carbon.
And I think in the Bahamas, we've done more or less a good job with teaching students about mangroves. But You know, there's always more room to learn, but there has been a lot of very keen interest with students from, you know, going to schools and communicating with them. They like to talk about mangrove ecosystems. And from your experience as well, working in the field with field trips and camps and snorkels, where do you think that this strong interest in mangroves of the Bahamas is coming from in young people?
Honestly, Crystal, it's because it's on the exam. What I do like is that marine education is a part of the curriculum, particularly mangroves. So they are on our national exams. Mm-hmm. So they do tend to, you know, to check off something in the curriculum that they can book a field trip, and we will be able to give that knowledge, or we will be able to come to the school and do a presentation on that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so essentially it mm-hmm. has a lot to do with the curriculum alignment with our educational system.
I also wanted to note that it is one of the most accessible marine ecosystems. So you could do like a mangrove tour, which we often do with students, which doesn't demand you getting wet or putting a toe in the water. Mm-hmm. And you're actually learning, encountering what you're learning about. You could see the fish from the shore because it's so clear, the water in the mangroves. Mm-hmm. And so it just provides you that ocean experience without all the fear of being in the water if you're not that comfortable.
Mm-hmm. And then also, why is it clear? I'm just out of curiosity. Why is it so clear in the mangroves? So there are some mangroves, right? Like some areas, like wetland areas, where it may look a little dirty. And so there are a lot of people who say that, oh, the mangroves are so dirty and they smell so bad. And then there are some that are so clear and beautiful. What's going on in those two, with those two different two different mangrove settings?
Well, wetlands can differ in different ways. Like, for example, in a creek, it'll tend to be clearer because you have a fresh set of water that's connected to the ocean being replenished each day. However, in a closed-off ecosystem like a pond, you may see it being less clear and more murky because, you know, it have different organisms that give off a color that lives solely in that ecosystem, and it is, and you know, it can be affected by rainfall and then also the changes in the season. So in a drier season it may look a little bit concentrated, but then if it went through a rainy season, it may change the color as well. And then also different plants such as the red mangrove also give like a red tannin that can sometimes color the water, so that may also contribute to that. And then also on the clarity, I'm so glad that you asked that. Besides mangroves being a filter, because it does act as a barrier between a lot of terrestrial plants and actually trap a lot of terrestrial organic substances before going into the ocean, it does form a barrier in that way as well, and it does break down a lot of that organic material. But also the mangrove forest is the home to a lot of filter feeders such as sponges, and it keeps the water super clear and pretty.
Mm-hmm. And Farah, what is your take on the whole climate change issue and how it impacts us in the Bahamas?
Yeah, so definitely growing up in the Bahamas, I've definitely noticed a lot of things like this happening in my community, and so I think some of the top things that I've definitely seen are increases in storm severity. And so, like I was speaking about Hurricane Dorian, as we all know, and other hurricanes that have happened in the past, like Francis and Jane, that have definitely we can see how they've like increased in severity over the years. Also, coral beaching, which is one of the most like popular things when we think about climate change, we always go back to that kind of conversation of coral beaching, and it's important, an important conversation. And then also sea level rise, but all of these things definitely are connected to climate change. And working with Brief has definitely allowed me to kind of see firsthand how we can take on things and make a change in our environments in that sense.
Mm-hmm. Very true. And so
I want to talk a little bit about coral reefs and ecosystems that are under threat in the Bahamas due to climate change. We've seen a lot of, and outside of the marine, we've also seen a lot of forest fires as well happening. How are these things related to climate change, the forest fires and the coral bleaching? And for coral bleaching, I want us to be a little bit more specific, because there were some methods in the past where people would literally bleach coral with chemicals. They would pour bleach into the ocean, and then that would cause the, you know, all the fish or lobsters or whatever the marine animals is come out from wherever they are. And that would be a method of fishing, which is illegal, by the way. And then there's also the coral bleaching happening from climate change. And so how does that impact the marine ecosystems, in the sense that, you know, when you talk about things like ocean acidification, right? When you talk about what coral bleaching actually does to a coral, things like that.
Well, I know I can speak to the forest fires aspect. I know growing up in Freeport, Grand Bahama, we often had forest fires. We would call it like the season for forest fires, especially when it was drier, I think around the springtime or so. But now we're seeing them increasing heavily. On top of that, you have intense heat that is added to it, so they're harder to put out. There's also a bit of water scarcity, seeing that sometimes when the trucks come, there's not water available for them to use. And then also you have the underbrush that's kind of filled with this dry plant matter, because we've had this intense heat for so long. And I know we're just at the beginning of the year, but the heat has been intense so far for this year, we've seen. And when you mix that with glass bottles and different plastics that might amplify,
be a little bit sunlight, more flammable.
Yeah, it's kind of like when you put sunlight, like something under a magnifying glass under the sun, it's going to start sparking. And especially all those glass bottles, if we start thinking about it, those are going to build up to forest fires. And that was usually the case in Freeport, but now we're seeing them pop up in different places, and they're intensifying because the air is hotter and drier, and it's easier for it to spread. And especially on days where we have high winds, we've been seeing, it's easier to just spread with the wind, especially crossing the road nowadays.
And so pollution combined with climate change has horrible impacts. So they have impacts intensify.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. It causes it to be worse. And then also, when we think about it, the smoke itself from
it's more harmful
from forest fires also add an next layer of greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. And then it also simultaneously takes away the plants that are already capturing that carbon and storing it away.
Wow. So that's a whole loop of
worst
case scenario loop
to worst. Yes.
And it repeats the problem, right? Yeah. We have climate change. The climate change causes the forest more intense forest fires. You have the forest fires there because there's pollution, and then that destroys the green the greenery that is supposed to be absorbing the CO2 emissions, but is actually contributing to more CO2 emissions instead, and it's the cycle continues. And we've also seen this not just in the Bahamas, but also in California this year. They've had a lot of fires as well, and in other countries as well that we're not really hearing that much about. They've seen these type of events happen as climate change intensifies in drier areas.
I also wanted to note on that point, we're seeing the intensification of fires, but we hadn't seen it in previous years, especially in New Providence. And so I like to say it was like the perfect conditions for that to occur. So when we think about the perfect conditions, like the dry air we were talking about, the intensifying heat and the pollution all come together to really hit that mark, to really start these fires. And then when you think about it in a sense of climate change, that's kind of what we're seeing with these intensifying hurricanes, right? And so we have really intensifying effects from these climate events. And when you have these perfect conditions line up, imagine warm waters, warm atmosphere, and then you can have intensifying really strong hurricanes that we could see. And that happened with Dorian. You had the perfect conditions for a terrible storm. And unfortunately, sometimes it's like that with climate change. You just have all the conditions come together to start a disaster.
And so we have to work on restoring and rebuilding and thinking about ways that we can reduce these type of impacts. So I know beach cleanups has a beach cleanup guide, right, that we use to clear away some of that pollution. And it may seem like a small thing, you know, of you and your youth group, your church group, your club, you know, going out and doing something like that. But all of these things are community initiatives that you can do to make a difference. You know, if you have 10 groups all doing that cleanup, that's less of a chance that you will have an intense fire, like, you know, what you would see. Mm-hmm. Now, shifting gears more into the climate change impacts on reefs and biodiversity, like our beloved conch, right? When we talk about coral bleaching and ocean acidification, I want you to talk a little bit about this, Farah, especially being a student and having covered and learned about a lot of these topics and present them.
Yes, so as far as I remember, if I remember correctly, ocean acidification is when there is such a large amount of carbon dioxide inside of the atmosphere that it gets absorbed into the ocean. And as a result of this, it creates this kind of like situation where it like starts breaking down.
Mm-hmm. It changes the pH.
Yes, the pH inside of the ocean. And so that's definitely obviously...
So what animals or, you know, ocean creatures or ecosystems are impacted by acidification? Like, what does that do?
Yeah, so corals are definitely affected by them, as well as seabeds are affected by them. So, like, things like seagrass and algae, all of these things, but especially corals. So when the carbon dioxide is inside of the ocean, it ends up kind of getting it increases the heat inside of the ocean pretty much. And so when this is like put onto the corals, they're such delicate creatures, so that when this happens, they end up getting like very agitated. And when they get agitated, they have this kind of symbiotic relationship with this algae that is called zooxanthellae. And when they get agitated by this heat, this increase in temperature, they end up expelling the zooxanthellae from their colonies, and they expel them, and they're like, you know what, get off of me, I'm still like agitated, I don't want anything on me. And this obviously creates an issue, because they use the zooxanthellae to get food and all of these different things. And so when the zooxanthellae end up leaving, they're kind of left in the open. They're not automatically dead, but they do end up dying eventually if there isn't another group of zooxanthellae that can come in and kind of assist them with rebuilding or regrouping themselves. And so ocean acidification is one of the most like severe threats that we're seeing happening, and I've definitely seen it firsthand, especially working at Coral Vita and being able to be an Eleuther at the island school. And seeing, I remember this one time I was literally just like snorkeling, and you'll be able to see these corals on the ground that are literally just dead white, completely white, from this heat, this intense heat that is happening, especially in more shallow areas, because the heat is able to penetrate the water easier. And so yeah, it's unfortunate.
And Heather, how would you say that this ocean acidification also impacts marine life, like conch or possibly sponges and other marine life that would have like shells and other components that would not work good in more acidic waters?
Yeah, so ocean acidification really hinders shell creation for animals such as conchs, like you mentioned, crabs, spiny lobster, crawfish, different things like that. And it really doesn't allow them to absorb the dissolved nutrients in the water, such as calcium carbonate, to really make up their shells because of this carbonic acid in the water. And Jasmine, do you want to touch a note on that?
Yes. And then also, the crawfish industry in itself, like fisheries is very important to the Bahamas, but millions of dollars, like people, entire livelihoods are based on crawfish, right? Or the spiny lobster, as we call them. So they this is a whole industry that depends on these marine life. Also conch. Conch is almost on every single menu, right? In the Bahamas, there's some type of stew or conch fritters or conch salad that we rely on conch almost every single day, mm-hmm. right? So ocean acidification is definitely going to have an impact on those key fisheries that are not just important to us for food, right? Or for, you know, restaurants, right? And tourism. But it's also a very important cultural dish, right? So those are, and also, you know, people use them for jewelry and crafts and other things. But also, speaking about climate change, I wanted to go another step further and talking about, we know how climate change impacts these marine ecosystems, right? But I want to talk a little bit about the how the biodiversity is impacted because of climate change. Are we seeing less of any species, or can we anticipate seeing some species, you know, not be around anymore as this intensifies, or are we like not on that level yet, or how much do we have to worry?
Well, sorry to alarm you guys, but we have to worry a lot. But because when we think about our coral reefs are the most biodiverse ecosystem in the world. And when we put that in, and biodiversity means it just has a high variety of different plants and animals living in one ecosystem. And then just to put that in perspective, coral reefs support about 25% of all marine all marine species, despite covering less than 1% of the ocean floor. Mm-hmm. So when you think about high concentration, the coral reefs are the high concentration hot spots of animals and plants in the ocean. And then when you put that, and then when we think about how climate change is affecting coral bleaching, although coral bleaching is one of the biggest issues that are facing coral reefs right now, and it's having mass coral bleaching every summer, and if the corals, if the ocean doesn't cool down in a specific time, the corals end up starving and dying. So we're thinking about losing one of our most biodiverse ecosystem, this ecosystem that supports most of our fisheries, mm-hmm. that supports our tourism, mm-hmm. that supports all of these other creatures. That's something that we should worry about.
So what can we do in the meantime as we try to mitigate, right? And try to plan for stronger resilience in the future?
Two things that we should be thinking mm-hmm. about, mitigation and adaption. So mitigation is like, how could we not make this problem worse? And that's like supporting marine protected areas, that's being more conscious of how we use fuel, how we use electricity, and these things.
Supporting environmental organizations.
Supporting environmental organizations.
And programs like BREATHE.
And programs and all these things that to prevent, through education, all of these things that prevent the situation from getting worse. And then also adaption as well. We know that some things that is going to happen, that, you know, that we have, I don't say that we can't control, but that we can mm-hmm. control. Mm-hmm. So by anticipating, for example, if we know that sea level is going to rise, it doesn't make sense us building too much more closer than the coast that we already have done so far. Then also when we do build, we need to start building our foundations a bit higher. Mm-hmm. We have to think more about sustainable designs that are more, that can fare a storm better. And all these things we have to consider when we think about the adaption when it comes to climate change.
Yes, very true, very true. And Heather, Farah, do you have any other suggestions on things we can do as a community moving forward, to as we battle climate change issues in the Bahamas?
Yeah, I agree with Jasmine. We are at the point where we are adapting to climate change and trying to reduce any further effects. So I would say have your plan in place and have your whole family prepared in case of a disaster, because the last thing we want to be is unprepared, because nowadays we're seeing we barely have a window to even anticipate or predict these disasters. One day it could be your house, next day it could be a fire. So these things are really unpredictable. So always be prepared and have a plan, I would say, especially in the event of intensifying disasters, natural disasters.
Awesome. Farah? No, Farah? No, nothing more to add? So what I would say is that, like, just to piggyback off Heather and Jasmine, learn more about what's happening. Talk about it. Speak up for policies that protect the environment. And that's whether you're joining a youth program, reducing your carbon footprint, or even helping to educate others, right? Everyone has a role to play. So let's work together to protect the Bahamas for future generations. And as always, please follow us at Brief242 to learn more about our programs, how you can get involved, and how you can support our programs. And also, thank you for tuning in to Our Blue Bahamas this week, and catch us next week, same time, same place. Thanks again for tuning in.